Welcome back. Last time, I introduced the Olmec, this somewhat paradoxical, perhaps we might say somewhat mysterious culture, located along the shores of the Gulf of Mexico in what's now Veracruz in Mexico, in the modern state of Mexico. When I say that Olmec is somewhat paradoxical, what we have to remember here is this somewhat unusual circumstance that we see in Olmec culture compared to those other societies that we've been looking at in other parts of the world. Here, with the Olmec, we see evidence of large ceremonial centers, really extraordinary centers, at places like San Lorenzo and La Venta. But interestingly enough, we see relatively little evidence for significant urban populations around those ceremonial centers. It seems that in this case, people were not living in large numbers in close proximity to those centers themselves. So it's as if we have this evidence for extraordinary exertion by populations in the construction of ceremonial centers, but without significant urbanism. And that is quite unusual. We have not seen that to this degree in other areas. To some degree, perhaps, in Southeast Asia, we see the appearance of ceremonial centers without huge urban populations, but the Olmec case is even more marked. Now, it may be that this has to do with the appearance of the Olmec in tropical forest environments. So the development of ceremonialism, the development of monumental architecture, without the kinds of agricultural intensification that we've seen to this point in many other parts of the world. The sort of relatively extensive agricultural system that may have been practiced by the Olmec may not have supported immense populations, or at least immense concentrations of population. We also have to think and wonder about the ideologies that would then impel relatively small groups of people to make the extraordinary efforts necessary to create these ceremonial centers. What were the religious reasons for it? What were the political arguments that elites could make to the rest of the population that would lead them to exert themselves to this tremendous degree? I also noted continuing debates in archaeology about whether the Olmec were, in a sense, the origin of these developments towards ceremonialism, towards monumental architecture, whether they were the origin of these developments in Mesoamerica, or whether they were simply the most striking examples that we have of wider distributions of shared, particularly elite culture, across the region as a whole. At this point, I would say it seems to be the latter. The idea that the Olmec were in some sense the mother culture for all of Mesoamerica seems to be somewhat overdrawn. As I noted in my last lecture, cultural developments in the Olmec heartland were paralleled in other parts of Mesoamerica. Thus, for example, in highland Mexico, Tlatilco, and related large villages yielded a complex art style with some parallels to contemporary early Olmec occupations in the lowlands to the south and east, but without evidence for large-scale architecture, or at least any large-scale architecture that's been found in this to this point. Although I would note it would be hard to miss the equivalents of those pyramids and plazas at San Lorenzo and La Venta. So developments toward urbanism occurred in the Valley of Mexico through the middle of the first millennium BC, first at sites like Cuicuilco which may have been inhabited by as many as 2,000 to 5,000 people, and which dominated nearby village settlements. Quilquilco was occupied between about 900 BC and AD 100. The first pyramid in Highland Mexico was built at Quilquilco, although it's rather different from contemporary Olmec earth pyramids. Its base is round rather than being square, and it has a stone core and brick exterior. Through the late first millennium BC, then, Quilquilco seems to have been in competition with the neighboring community of Teotihuacan, situated about 55 kilometers or 35 miles to the northeast. A nearby volcanic eruption in about 50 BC seems to have led to the long-term decline of Quilquilco and possibly allowed its rival, Teotihuacan, to increase in power. And we have to think about the possibility beyond all of the cultural processes that we've been discussing in these lectures up to this point. We also have to remember the possibility of natural interventions, of events like volcanic eruptions that may play a determining role in the development of states and civilizations in different parts of the world. The ultimate expression, then, of early urbanism in Highland Mexico was this great site of Teotihuacan, located northeast of modern Mexico City and occupied between 200 BC and AD 750. At its height, between AD 150 and AD 400, Teotihuacan housed between 100,000 and 150,000 people in its sprawling apartment compounds, making it one of the very largest cities in the world at the time. Teotihuacan was surrounded by a variety of regional centers in the Valley of Mexico, all much smaller than Teotihuacan itself, but really too large to be considered villages. There was a significant degree of depopulation in the immediate vicinity of the great city. Teotihuacan seems to have exerted close control, if you'll remember that formulation I used when I was speaking about the territorial zones of states. We might think of this as the inner zone, the zone directly controlled on a day-by-day basis by Teotihuacan. This inner zone then extended out to a distance of 60 kilometers, 40 miles or more. The closest analogy to this situation may be the hyper-urbanism characteristic of the early dynastic period in southern Mesopotamia. However, in Mesopotamia, this phenomenon is often accounted for by the threat of military action, as we've noted. And as far as we know, Teotihuacan had no serious military rivals in the vicinity. Perhaps instead, this was a means of population control, a way of keeping the mass of common people more directly under the control of elites. There certainly is a great deal of evidence for centralized control in Teotihuacan. The city is laid out in a grid pattern, and its general axis, particularly the central axis in the ceremonial center of Teotihuacan, is oriented carefully to 15.5 degrees east of astronomical north. And this is an orientation that exists repeatedly, that archaeologists find repeatedly in ceremonial centers associated with other societies in Mesoamerica as well, with the Maya, for example, and later on with the Aztec. And it is probably, again, a manifestation of ideas about religion, about the nature of the universe and people's position in the universe that are widely shared across the whole area. The ceremonial center of Teotihuacan seems, again, to have been carefully planned as more or less one ritual and ideological unit, with the Avenue of the Dead and the great pyramids of the sun and the moon flanking it. This ceremonial center also contains a number of other temples and platforms, which probably originally had temples on top. This is, as I said, a ritual, a ceremonial center. Most of these structures along the Avenue of the Dead were built before about AD 250. We have to think now about the periodization of the site. We have this extraordinary building phase that goes on before about AD 250. Careful measurement of the dimensions of this monumental architecture, including the pyramids, along the Avenue of the Dead, indicates that structures were being laid out in units that correspond to calendars that are widely shared among Mesoamerican populations. This includes a sacred year of 260 days and a different yearly cycle of about 365 days, which we're going to find among the Maya as well. And again, as with the astronomical orientation of the site as a whole, this would seem to indicate the widespread sharing of these cosmological ideas, these ideas about how the universe works and how people fit within the universe, the widespread sharing of these ideas among these Mesoamerican groups, probably going back to earlier times. And the question then becomes for archaeologists, were the Olmec and their contemporaries in other parts of Mesoamerica, were those elites interacting over the region as a whole the source of these widely shared later beliefs? The Pyramid of the Sun was built over an enlarged natural cave with its walls plastered with mud and roofed with basalt. This structure was obviously of great religious importance, probably as an entrance to the underworld. And this is, again, a common belief that we will see that probably actually existed with the Olmec, and that we will see, for example, with the Maya as well, this relationship between these ceremonial architecture, caves, and entrances to the underworld. So this general layout of ceremonial centers is widely shared. Essentially, what we see at Teotihuacan harkens back to the pyramid, temple, and plaza arrangements on the Olmec sites, like San Lorenzo and La Venta, and also at Cuicuilco. And it probably does derive from widely shared ideas about elite governance and religion that I discussed in the last lecture. And this is indeed a very striking aspect of Mesoamerican civilization. There are two elements, two characteristics of this central ceremonial area at Teotihuacan that really have to be emphasized. First is the discovery of rich tombs with evidence for human sacrifices under a number of the pyramids, including the Pyramid of the Moon and the Pyramid of the Feathered Serpent, which is the third largest pyramid at Teotihuacan. under the ladder, under the pyramid of the feathered serpent, almost 200 victims were found, bound and sacrificed. Many of these victims seem to have been young men, while others were young women. Isotopic analysis of their bones, as if you remember, was done for individuals in the warrior graves in post-palatial Knossos on Crete, suggests that many of these people were foreigners. And just to note, the way that this is done is that particularly strontium isotopes in tooth enamel, which is formed in childhood, is compared to strontium isotope levels in bone, which is reformed in later years. And this allows archaeologists to establish whether individuals were born in the same place as they were buried. If the strontium isotopes are the same in both cases, then there's a likelihood that people have lived in a particular area all their lives. If they are quite different, then it would imply that people grew up someplace else and came to their place of burial, like the pyramid of the feathered serpent at Teotihuacan, from some other place, and thus that they were foreigners. So this mass sacrifice in the pyramid of the feathered serpent has been suggested to have been a sacrifice of guards and servants from an elite household. Four other tombs were found under the pyramid of the moon, again with human and animal sacrifices, along with artifacts suggestive of contacts with the Maya lowlands. So we have, again, this phenomenon of human sacrifice. There's also a great deal of evidence for the looting of tombs and the destruction of monumental architecture in the ceremonial center at Teotihuacan. Large burials at the Pyramid of the Feathered Serpent, again, have been looted to such a degree that their contents are more or less unknowable, while structures around that pyramid were extensively destroyed in prehistory. Now, this is not recent looting. This is not looting as a result, for example, of the trade in ancient antiquities. This happened itself. This looting and destruction happened itself in antiquity, probably during the latter part of the occupation of Teotihuacan itself. So what it may suggest is some kind of internal political or ideological conflict within the city of Teotihuacan, possibly. It might imply invasion, although there's not very much evidence for that otherwise. But it does imply a fairly turbulent history for the city of Teotihuacan. The diet of Teotihuacan's inhabitants. Let's get back to the economic basis just for a moment. The diet of Teotihuacan's inhabitants probably resembled that of their village-based ancestors, with corn, squash, and amaranth the most important cultigens. There is some evidence for irrigation systems in the area around the city, but the extent to which agricultural intensification may have contributed to the rise of Teotihuacan is unknown. Now, obviously, there was an efficient agricultural system in place because it was supporting a city of 100,000 people or more. What we need to find out more about is the characteristics of that agricultural system. At some point after about AD 200, construction of large single-story apartment buildings began on the site. These are actually quite unique to Teotihuacan. We don't find these among the Olmec. We don't find them on Maya sites. They do not appear on much later Aztec sites. Apartment buildings. These have interior courtyards, often with temples inside, and sometimes contain over 100 small and fairly dark rooms. Over 2,000 of these apartment complexes have been identified at Teotihuacan to date. Neighborhoods across the city seem to have contained mixes of wealthier and poorer people. Although apartments closer to the ceremonial center of Teotihuacan tend also to be more elaborate and larger, with more costly domestic and grave goods, and with walls painted with murals. However, there seems to be a continuum in household size and elaboration, and Teotihuacan has not yielded any structures that could be at this point clearly identified as palaces. The apartments also housed workshops for craftspeople and may have been occupied at least in part by lineages of related kinsmen or groups of people employed in the same crafts. It may well be that these different families and lineages specialized in different crafts. So you get a group of related people working, for example, in pottery production or stoneworking. Trade seems to have been an important factor in the rise of Teotihuacan. Its influence is seen widely around Mesoamerica, and Teotihuacan has sometimes been thought of as a kind of commercial empire, with its culture spread mostly by traders. There is particular evidence of trade and other contacts at the site of Caminalhuyu in Guatemala, which is some distance away. This is actually being suggested to represent a Teotihuacan trading settlement within a southern Maya community. Important contacts also existed between Teotihuacan and other contemporary Maya centers in the early mid-first millennium AD, especially at the Maya sites of Tikal and Copan, and also at the site of Matacapan in the Gulf of Mexico in Veracruz. I will note, though, in some cases this contact does not seem to have been especially peaceful. But such contact was reciprocated. The Oaxaca Barrio at Teotihuacan was probably the home of people from that part of Mexico, while other areas in the city of Teotihuacan have yielded traces of Maya and Western Mexican immigrants. So we see this evidence for trade and contact, but as we will see, Maya written evidence implies a significantly more assertive and indeed militaristic stance from Teotihuacan toward Maya centers like Tikal. There is even some evidence that Teotihuacan was able to engineer the disposal and death of a Tikal Maya ruler and his replacement by a dynasty with origins at Teotihuacan. Now, we will talk about this in more detail when we examine the development of Maya states further to the south, but I want to note the implications of those accounts at this point. What they imply is that Teotihuacan was able to project, in some sense, militarily, diplomatically, religiously, in all of these senses combined, they were able to project power at some distance away from the Valley of Mexico into the Maya lowlands, to the extent that they could depose an indigenous ruler and replace him with one of their own. That's an impressive capability for an early civilization. As I noted, Teotihuacan grew rapidly to become the largest city in Mesoamerica and one of the largest in the world in the early first millennium AD. Around AD 600, though, the city entered an extended period of population decline decrease in external trade, and eventually collapse. Archaeologists debate the reason for this collapse. Of course, we debate almost anything. Did it involve external invasion and the subsequent destruction of the city? An internal uprising against local elites? The effects of drought that began in the late 6th century AD and that seemed to have extended quite generally in the region? Or perhaps some combination of all of the above? At this point, the evidence does not seem to support an external invasion. And for one thing, because it's entirely unclear who the invaders would have been. And destruction in the 7th century AD, that is the degree of destruction that we see associated with the final decline at Teotihuacan, seems limited to the central ceremonial area, which is not what we would probably expect to see in the course of an invasion. A similar event, hundreds of years earlier, as I noted, in the 3rd century AD, is usually taken as evidence for internal political struggles. And these may also have been the reason for Teotihuacan's eventual decline. What kind of a political unit was Teotihuacan? Our interpretation is rendered more challenging by the lack of writing at Teotihuacan. Although, as we'll see in subsequent lectures, writing was well known in contemporary Mayan city-states. There's plenty of evidence that Teotihuacan elites made use of standardized symbols for at least some purposes, probably including religious and political purposes. However, these symbols remain highly abstracted and invariant. They're never combined in ways that could be considered grammatical, and their meanings remain quite unclear. And it's interesting to imagine why Teotihuacan people never bothered to adopt writing when they must have been quite aware that the Maya were using it. Indeed, as I said, Maya descriptions are one of our main sources of information on Teotihuacan and its elites. These sources speak of rulers with, as I noted, considerable influence beyond the Valley of Mexico. Such rulers may well have existed. They seem to have existed, but they're elusive at Teotihuacan itself. As I said, as I noted, no undoubted palaces have been found, no royal tombs that we can really point to and say these are the tombs of Teotihuacan's kings and queens. None such have been found. There's just been a lot of looting, it's true. In sharp contrast to the Maya, as we shall see, Teotihuacan's elite did not advertise themselves in iconography, artwork, or display. The degree of urban planning on display at Teotihuacan does imply a powerful central governing structure. The evidence of some destruction in the 3rd century AD at structures like the Pyramid of the Feathered Serpent, the cessation of construction of large ceremonial architecture at about the same time suggests that there was some change, some conflict in the system of governance in the 3rd century AD. The Teotihuacan state seems to have controlled the Valley of Mexico with no obvious rivals from about AD 100 to AD 600. Beyond this core area, it seems to have administered enclaves in strategically important regions rather than controlling large areas directly. Teotihuacan is a good example of a centralized territorial state, powerful over a significant area. It seems to have exerted substantial commercial influence on both highland and lowland Mesoamerica. The balance between that commercial influence and Teotihuacan's military power remains unclear, but it does seem to have been intervened militarily in the affairs of Maya states almost 1,000 kilometers or 600 miles away. As we will see, it stands in sharp contrast to the more fragmented system of political authority found in Maya territories to the south. And we'll begin to look at the development of Maya civilization in my next lecture. Thank you.